welcome back to the program. It looks like we seem to have touched a nerve as the phone lines are lighting up with people who want to get in their say on the 131 debate. 780-1290. Keep calling. We'll get you on as soon as we can, as soon as the phone line opens up. Follow us on Twitter. FlashJet1 tweets at Illegal Curve to stop the 131. The NHL could introduce a modified icing rule if defending team has more than three players behind the red line. Very similar to what you said, Richie, in that you know, you're allowed to dump it in at that point.
True, let Guy Boucher play his 1-3-1. What's the problem here? It's a strategy.
I'm not saying that he can't play it, but I'm saying that other teams should be able to...
Or four guys in the neutral zone, the same kind of thing.
I'll tell you this much. If the Philadelphia Flyers play the puck in their own zone and stand there like they did, my dad, who's going to his first game sitting in the upper deck, might throw a calculator at the Philadelphia Flyers to calculate how much money he just wasted on paying for that ticket. You know what I'm saying, Drew.
Let's go to the calls.
Yeah, let's go to Carl in St. James. He's calling online, too. Carl, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. It's K. Decky here. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. How you doing?
Pretty good. You know what? I agree with both coaches. They both have systems, and both teams were listening to their coach and playing their systems. It just happened that both systems collided at a point in the game, which was the first minute, which was unbelievable why Boucher was playing that in the first minute. But you can't force one team to play not their system because the other team is playing their own system. You know what I'm saying? Like, I coach minor hockey, and we tell the guys not to stick handle through the neutral zone if there's too many guys to pass the puck to an open player. Well, if no one's open, so wait for them to pressure you, and then you pass the puck.
Carl, I agree with what you're saying, but that was a deliberate attempt to waste time.
I don't think so. I think he was playing his systems.
Yeah, I think the issue isn't, to me, exactly. Carl, both coaches are doing what they're doing. I think, to me, the issue is whether what they're doing should be legal or not. And to me, you can certainly legislate, you can get a rule in there that prevents that many guys from being in the neutral zone all the time. And then it prevents all these, prevents the dump-ins, and it forces teams to be more aggressive, thereby creating turnovers and creating offense. I mean, the game can be boring at times, and I think that they're thinking of creative ways to change that would be good.
I don't know. If you bring in a lot of players in the neutral zone, that kind of stuff, those kind of rules, then you're turning it into basketball where refs are waving their arms, counting how many guys are in the key, how many seconds are they in there. It just gets to be... It gets away from the game of hockey where it's hockey now, the coaches and the players are so good that it ends up being a chess match. And what happened was there was a stalemate.
And I'm not sure if it's because they're so good or they're so programmed to listen to the coaches and the coaches are so programmed to sell defense over offense.
I think that's probably the case. If you play a defensive style, you're less likely to get fired. Carl, appreciate the call.
Hey, no problem, guys. Keep up good work.
Hey, Carl, I want to say one more thing to Carl really quickly, though. I don't know. Is Carl, are you still there? I don't know. I think we lost him. Are you still there? I think you're right about hockey being a chess match, but I think that wasn't a stalemate. I think he was putting his king down there.
I don't get the reference, but that's great.
I understand the reference. That's pretty clever, Izzy.
You play chess?
I didn't play chess.
You're giving up. I mean, my problem with this fundamentally, we got to go to calls, but I just think that was basically saying, we're not going to try to get through your 1-3-1, and you agree with that, but I don't understand why you do that there. I don't understand what kind of thing, what you're trying to accomplish. Anyways, let's keep going here.
Line 3, Trevor in River Heights. Trevor.
Way to go, Izzy.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that, Trevor.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to line 4, Nathan in St. James. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Hello. I just don't understand what everybody's problem is with the 1-3-1. I mean, it's a strategy that's been used for years.
I agree with that.
Different defensive styles have been used in the game. I mean, I think it was completely on Philly to move the puck in that game. I don't quite understand what everybody's problem is with.
Let me ask you, Trevor. Let me ask you. Why would Tampa move the puck? Sorry, why would Philly move the puck into the 1-3-1?
You're answering a question with a question right now, Richie. That's a very lawyer thing to do.
Well, why would they? Why would if Philly's got the puck, why would they feed into Tampa? Why would they not make Tampa do something different?
Advance the puck.
Sorry?
It's a rule that they have to advance the puck, right?
Yeah, if they're moving, then that's fine. They're moving looking for a chance to advance the puck. After the first time, they weren't doing anything illegal. They were moving around looking for an option. And if nobody was, veering off the 1-3-1, and they didn't have an option, they passed it across. They looked for another option. I mean, that's the rules. It doesn't play a factor there.
I don't know. Minnesota's used the trap. I think Scott Bowman's even used the trap in Montreal.
Oh, no.
Something new.
And I agree, and I think the issue isn't just the 1-3-1. I think the issue is the trap in general.
Yeah.
It's 1-3-1 trap or a 1-2-2. I think all of these guys, when they have so many guys in the neutral zone that you have no other option, but to either dump it in or rotate it back to the other defenseman or just play that doesn't move forward. And I think that's, at the end of the day, what the issue is.
Exactly right. Nathan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, I called him Trevor.
I have one more thing.
Sure, Nathan.
It's as a fan of the game, I mean, it's boring to watch the trap, but it is effective, and I think that's what we're all seeing. The point is that it's an effective style, but it's boring to watch.
Exactly. No argument there. It is effective, and if it wasn't effective, they wouldn't employ it, but it is certainly boring, and I mean, as a hockey fan myself, I'd much rather see a more freewheeling style, even if it has to be mandated into the game.
And if it's mandated into the game, coaches are creative enough to think of other alternatives to play defense and offense.
Thank you, Nathan. Appreciate the call. Let's go to line one, Jesse, the pizza delivery guy. Jesse, I could use a pizza right now.
You know, I owe you guys one. I hooked up Hustler and Lawless. I figure you guys should be next on the list.
I would expect so, yeah.
Who do you deliver pizza for, Jesse? I used to deliver for Mona Lisa.
I'm with Hotline.
Okay. Oh, nice.
We like Hotline. Yeah.
You're a corporate man.
That's right.
Jesse, what's on your mind?
I wanted to just touch on what you guys are talking about.
About pizza?
No. The trap that you guys are referencing, I wouldn't even call it a 1-3-1. It's more of an 0-5. like, the trap that was used in the 90s and maybe even more recently was more originally designed, I think, for as a forecheck, where, you know, the one actually engages the D with the puck and pushes them to the wall, make sure nothing gets cut back to the middle.
Yep.
And then the second guy, his job is basically to take the man and cut off the play there. And then, you know, ideally you create turnovers that way. And the system being engaged by Tampa is, like I said, it's more of an 0-5. They sit back and they literally wait for the puck to come to them. Whereas, like I said, the older trap is, they actually engage the puck offensively.
I think, Jesse, you're definitely right about, you know, the differences there. I think one of the things was that Tampa didn't necessarily, I don't think this was necessarily Tampa's forecheck. Where they would actually have, you know, this is more of a neutral zone play where the puck's already been, you know, they're kind of regrouping Philly, and then they back it off. I think the forecheck tap would probably be more aggressive, but I understand the distinction as well in that the trap was kind of used initially to forecheck with one guy and then create turnovers off the wall there. So then that's very true.
Jesse, appreciate the call. You can just bring that pizza by any time in the next hour and 15 minutes.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah. Let's go to line two. Stan is in South St. Vitale. Stan, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. You know, it's just real easily fixed.
Yeah.
If you go back to basketball, before there was a shot clock,
yeah.
If the score is tied, the rule was defense had to initiate action.
Yep.
Otherwise, the team that was losing had to initiate the action.
Yep.
So as long as Tampa is up in the score, they could play whatever trap they want to play.
Interesting.
But if it's a tied game or they're losing, they have to send a guy into forecheck. And if they don't, you get a delay game penalty, 2 minutes, and then you can't play the trap because you're shorthanded.
That's a good idea.
So I think if they go back to what basketball used to do, because this used to be a problem in basketball where guys used to hold the ball for 8 minutes.
Right.
Sure.
Waiting for the last shot. I think this is easily solved, and all it takes is just to look into another sport, and we'll take it from there.
And great call. And I think also what that does is it encourages you to get that first goal so you're in the driver's seat.
That's right. I mean,
exactly.
I have no problem with that. To the victor go the rewards. And if you take the lead, then you should be able to employ whatever strategy you deem best in order to hold on to that lead.
That's a good idea.
But with the 0-0, you know, you might as well somebody's got to be the initiator.
And that game was 0-0 when it happened.
Of course.
That's why it was, yeah.
That's right. And then when Tampa was down 1-0, and that's when they went away from their 1-3-1, they realize they have to forecheck.
Right.
Yeah, but even when it's a tie, it should still be the defense's responsibility or force the action.
I agree with you there, Stan. I appreciate the call.
Okay. No problem. Stan. Have a good day.
Thanks very much. Let's head to the break. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. It's a great conversation. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm not sure what happened to Ezzy. I think Richard must have pummeled him into the hall into submission. Is that what happened,
Richard? Making coffees, and I realized we'd both be late, so I ran back.
How many coffees is that up for you guys now? You're at least on 5 or 6, am I right?
No. That would be number 3.
And that's coffee number 3? Okay,
yeah.
That's a reasonable amount of coffee.
Already had your second cup of coffee earlier. Don't throw me under the bus.
I've had my third, let's be honest. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. That's where we'll be tonight to watch the Jets-Blue Jackets game. 6 p.m. puck drop.
You'll be more at the bar than at the grill.
That's true. Actually, I'll probably be at both, let's be honest. 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. Hustler and Lawless get underway 3 o'clock right after us, and then Rick Ralph with the pregame show at 5 o'clock. Ezzy, it looks like a nice cup of coffee.
Rick Ralph started to write for TSN.ca/Winnipeg.
Exactly. Yeah, a nice article up there. Let's move away from the 1-3-1 conversation. That was a little bit heated. And I'm sure this will be a much more reasoned, relaxed conversation. What position should Dustin Byfuglien be playing for the Winnipeg Jets?
Dustin Byfuglien should be a hybrid. He should be a forward, a defenseman, and a goalie.
Everybody wants to move him to forward. I don't agree with that.
Okay, why don't you agree with that? Let's start with that first
Again,
and foremost.
You put him on forward, he's likely, you know, maybe he's your first line or your second. Regardless, he's not a top goal. You know, he's not a $5.2 million forward. That's something you need to take into account, especially on a team that's not going to be spending to the cap. Also, for as many poor decisions as he makes on defense, he still creates a lot of offense from the back end. He makes the defense somewhat of a strength, though not much of one, as opposed to a fairly big weakness. And I think what you take off of defense and add to forward doesn't help you in the big scheme of things.
So the negatives that come as a result of him not on the back end are outweigh the positives that come from a result of him being on the front end.
Well, anything with him outweighs anything else, but...
Unnecessary. That was a... Sorry. Yeah, the only difference is, Ezzy, you're 5'10". He's 6' something.
I'm 5'9".
Sorry, I was even giving you the benefit of the doubt.
I'm trying to take some pills for that.
But, how about exercise?
Yeah, that's you don't need pills when you have the ability to move your legs. But
you can't, there's no pill for exercise when there's
you know, 8 hockey games on. It's tough to exercise. I mean, my exercise is going up to the fridge to get another pizza bagel. So, anyways, but in all seriousness, though, Dustin Byfuglien. This is, I mean, I remember Remus and I were at the draft. See how I said Remus and I?
That was going to work, yeah.
Remus and Kyle and I were at the draft, and when Claude Noel
Remus,
was hired,
Kyle and I.
That's true. when Claude Noel was hired, and there was that press conference, I believe it was at the Westin in Minneapolis, we asked Claude Noel that. Kyle said, you know what, ask Claude Noel about, would you consider moving Dustin Byfuglien up to forward? Because he was a forward with the Blackhawks. And he said at the time, you know, it's too early to say. And now he's been asked that ad nauseum. And basically, Noel says the same thing over and over again. No, we're not considering moving him to forward. And Byfuglien likes to play defense. But the thing that I disagree with Richie a little bit. I agree with most of his points. But I think that he should maybe be playing a little bit more of both. He should be up on forward and playing defense the majority of the time. He's effective on the point on the power play. He's effective in front of the net on the power play. But maybe give him a little more ice time as a forward, and then have, you know, maybe his mistakes wouldn't be as apparent if he was playing both. I mean, it's not unheard of for a guy to play defense and forward in the same game.
780-1290, area code 204.
We're opening the lines for this now, too.
780-1290. You can send us your thoughts on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Drew's opening up the Red River floodway right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Exactly, but, Richie, I mean, you follow the game with a very, you know, jaundiced eye. And what do you?
And opposed to me, a sober eye.
And that's true. What do you see when you see Byfuglien playing defense? Is he bringing?
One thing people need to understand is this: you know, his defensive gaffes, and there have been a large number of them so far. Well, first of all, I think he really does miss Enstrom, and we can talk about that in a second. But I think what people fail to remember is, when he's creating offense and when the puck's in the other end, that's a form of defense, guys.
Yep, sure.
And I don't think people equate the, you know, they don't equate the two. Is if he's creating offense, okay, it's mutually exclusive to what he does defensively. But no, it's not. When he's creating offense, he's not playing defense, and the team's not playing defense. And I think that's a factor here.
And if a team's playing offense more often, then they're likely to win because the puck's in the opponent's zone.
He has to cut down, obviously, on the turnovers, and there's some laziness factor and some reads. I don't necessarily think it's a hockey sense issue as much as it's like a willingness issue. And there's some plays he plays really poorly on the back end and makes some really bad decisions.
Well, that's good hockey sense, Byfuglien.
I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you know what? That's why I'm agreeing with you at the same time I'm disagreeing with you a little bit, but...
Well, if it's not a hockey sense issue and it's a motivation issue, is that what you're saying? It's a motivation issue?
It might be an issue of, you know, I think also, Drew, what a motivation, I'm not sure motivation, I think it's a discipline issue in terms of himself.
Yes.
I think also, I think that he gets a little bit too excited at times. You know, he wants to get the puck, so he goes after the puck as if he's playing, you know, in a 14-year-old. And he's not, obviously. He's, you know, he's been in the league for many years now. But I think he can be... I think what I'm saying is the areas that he's lacking in, if he's willing to be coached, he can be coached in. You can't teach the skill that he has.
Yep.
But you can teach him to play a better style and have better awareness in the defensive zone. Because I think his awareness is good. It's just a matter of heightening that awareness. I think his coachable aspects of his game make for him to be potentially a very good defenseman.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, people talk about why he's not on the penalty kill. Well, Craig Ramsey, you know, a more accomplished defensive player than maybe anybody else ever, aside from Bob Gainey, employed him 5 seconds a game, as he mentioned to Kevin Cheveldayoff on the penalty kill last year. This year he's playing 30 seconds, still a minimal amount.
How did he end up playing 5 seconds a game? It's a weird...
Because he wasn't trustworthy in the own zone. So there's two arguments. One, you play him where he's good, even strengthen on the power play, and you load up those minutes.
Shield him
or maybe the mindset was, until he develops defensively, we're not going to put him on the PK because he can log big minutes. So there's many factors that go along with this. I do think that he's a polarizing figure, and polarizing figures obviously, you know, garnish a lot of attention. But I think he brings more to the table than people give him credit for, and I think putting him a forward in many ways limits his abilities, limits the use of his skill set.
You know what? And I agree. And you know what? Let's say this, because, you know, compromise is always a good thing, right? If people, and I think people in general with the Winnipeg Jets need to relax a little bit. Claude Noel, I think, is doing a good job. And I think Dustin Byfuglien, for the most part, he's made mistakes, but he's been there night in and night out. In the Florida game, he took a penalty in the second period. Me and Richie and I, sorry, I have to lose my habits. Hopefully I'll quit smoking too. He took a penalty. He poked at Theodore and took a penalty. We thought, you know what? He's firing his team up.
Yeah, I didn't mind that.
He wanted to because that team was flatter than could be. I mean, the reason why he took that penalty...
They didn't have a shot for 20 minutes in that game,
Drew. Of course. He wanted to light a little bit of a spark under the team when he did that. That was obvious.
At the leadership role, he was wearing an A.
That's right. I mean, and I think that's it's not a bad thing that he wants to take on a leadership role, right? This is a guy who's, you know, his maturity has maybe been called into question a little bit. So if he wants to take on a larger role and be the motivator of a team that's dull, that's certainly a good thing. Must mean that he feels comfortable in that dressing room.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's
all the players on the Jets, if you ask any of them, they say he's got a great sense of humor and they love him. And the fans love him. I remember Remus made this comment at the Panthers game up in the press box. People want to see Byfuglien do well. He's a fan favorite, and I think he is going to get better. And once again, I'll say this again, he's only 26 years old. It's not like he's a wily veteran. He's still a work in progress.
Exactly right. I think we have a caller, but I'm not 100% sure if what's going on there, so we'll wait.
Yeah, Remus is asleep, so...
Remus is asleep at the switch, literally. His face is headfirst into the phone right now.
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, so you're fine with...
Hey, Drew, what do you think?
I'm the host. I never give my opinion.
Nicely played.
I'm an impartial observer is what I am.
So, Ezzy, are you saying you want him on forward or defense?
Okay, I'm gonna compromise and say that he should stay on defense, but they should stop. Okay. Everyone should stop saying that he shouldn't be freelancing. I think he should be a freelancing defenseman. I think that...
So you want him to be what he is right now?
I've changed my opinion. I think stay on defense.
That's a 180.
Let him freelance. I still think, though, he should be used as a forward at times, because I think that he's going to be up there anyways. So I'd like to maybe see him play a little bit of forward and defense, a little bit of both in each game. Let's compromise a little bit here.
When it's a power play, I'd like to see him stationed more in front of the net.
I agree.
Now, I think that the team probably wants to do that a little bit more often as well. I think it's just a function of injuries right now.
I think it's good if you have him in front of the net as a rotation on the power play when the power play suits that. I think when you take him away from there, I think he should be moving around at forward, not just standing there all the time, because I think his shot and his ability to, you know, create space is limited if he's only in front of the net. But at times, I think he should be in front
When he's charging in from the blue line, when he's on the power play, you know, after the rotation between him and Enstrom or him and whoever, that's an imposing sight coming down on a team that's one man short.
And Drew, I understand a lot of people have called in to the postgame show and all this and said that it's enough of this, but I think people should stop looking at that as a weakness. First off, there are other weaknesses, but that's a strength. There aren't a lot of guys that have Dustin Byfuglien's size and ability. There just aren't.
Oh, well, you know what? At the end of the day, guys, you're going to get people going after him because they see the potential in him. And
he's a lightning rod.
And, you know what? They're going to look at the GST line and say they played great, and they have played very well. But you look at Chris Thorburn, he has one assist in 16 games. He's not going to get the criticism. So
you're right. I mean, the expectations on Byfuglien are a lot different than the expectations.
I'm not going to allow anybody to criticize anybody on the GST line.
Well, the
best line in hockey right now. Always taxing the opposition.
The expectations on both of those lines are completely different, and as a result, people respond differently. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we'll try and get to some of the calls that have been coming in. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Apologies to our good friend Zach in Toronto and our even dearer friend Maddie Leibel, because we have Damian Christodoro online.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're joined now by Damian Christodoro from the St. Petersburg Times. Damian, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, good to be here.
Thanks, Damian. Thanks for joining us. How are everything? Are you in St. Louis tonight? Is that where you guys are?
Yeah, they play the Blues tonight.
Okay. Damian, we just spent the last half an hour or so having a spirited debate on the really the number one topic in hockey at the moment. That would be the 1-3-1 fiasco from Wednesday night. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I think it's a fake controversy, personally. I mean, the Lightning's played the 1-3-1 for two seasons now, and all of a sudden it blows up like this. I mean, it just seemed like it was contrived. And I think that personally, and I know I'm going to come off sounding like a homer here, but I think that the reaction has been misplaced on the Lightning. I think the Flyers should be blamed even more than the Lightning because, look, it just seemed logical. You have the Flyers, the top scoring team in the league, playing a Lightning team that was battered by injuries, had two of its top three defensemen out of the lineup. You're going to tell me that the Flyers wouldn't have run over the Lightning if they would have come at them with everything they had? I mean, I think that it was a terrible showing by the Flyers. I mean, like I said, I know I'm going to sound like a homer, but I just think that the anger is really misplaced.
Why do you think the public sentiment's been in Philly's favor?
I don't even know. I don't even know why. I mean, maybe some of it has to do with the fact that the Lightning's in a small market, Sun Belt team that, people don't believe hockey should be in Florida from the get-go. Maybe there's some prejudice there. But all I'm saying is I don't think that we've heard enough criticism that I think is valid against what the Flyers did. I don't see how taking your team out of about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of offensive possession time in a game that you lose 2-1 was a very good strategy for the Flyers. And I just don't think you hear that side of it.
You mentioned earlier, Damian, of course, this team's been playing it, for 2 years since Guy Boucher came into Tampa. Where was the outcry, where was the outcry last year when Tampa was in Game 7 against Boston in a 0-0 game in about, the middle of the second, third period?
And that game has been touted as one of the best games of last season. And the other thing is, look at the Chicago Blackhawks. The Chicago Blackhawks came in a few days before the Flyers and took the Lightning completely out of its system by attacking, by forcing the issue. They scored 4 goals in the second period. I mean, and the Lightning is, 24th, 25th in the league when it comes to goals against? You can't tell me that you can't score on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Their defense is not great. Two of their top three guys are out. And you sit back like that, I think that there's a lot more questions that need to be asked of the Flyers than the Lightning, personally.
And Damian, like you said, the Tampa Bay Lightning have been employing this 1-3-1 system successfully for 2 years now. And, you cover the Tampa Bay Lightning, more than anyone. And what tactics have been employed by other teams to basically combat this system successfully?
Well, I mean, you have to have speed on defense. I mean, to move the puck, you have to have a fast transition. You have to have skilled guys that can get the puck behind the forwards or behind the first wave of defense and get into the defenseman because that's where the team is most vulnerable. And I think teams with some speed and with some creativity have been able to do that. I don't think it's a big secret. So I just still am at kind of a loss as to what the Flyers were trying to prove there, and I'm at a complete loss at why they don't take more blame for what went on.
You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. We're joined by Damian Christodero of the St. Petersburg Times. Damian, with a who's who of some offensive powerhouses on the Lightning, the Cavaliers, St. Louis, Stamkos, Malone, why has the power play struggled so far this season?
Well, you know, it struggled a little bit last season as well, and it's been one of those questions that's been kind of lingering over the team. I think part of it, and this is going to sound weird, it's just that they don't get a lot of time on the power play. I think if I looked at the stats this morning, I think only one or two teams have had fewer power play opportunities than the Lightning. I don't think that's an excuse. I just think that kind of plays into it a little bit. But I think it's a big guessing game here as well as to why they don't do better on the power play. The flip side of that, of course, is that they've done great 5-on-5. They're one of the better teams scoring goals 5-on-5. So that's kind of evened it out a bit. But I'm with you. I'm at kind of a loss for that. You know, and now that I'm talking about it, I will say this. Because they have such high-end talent on their power plays, I think one of the problems is that they pass the puck too much. They don't take enough shots. They look for a perfect play. They look for a pretty play. And I think that their skill level maybe hinders them in that sense, if that makes any sense, that they just try and be too fine with what they're doing, and they don't give themselves an easy play like a shot and a rebound. As much as they should.
You know, you talk about skill, and another one of the players in Tampa that's very skilled is youngster Brett Connolly. You know, the team decided to keep him up this year, Damian. Can you kind of give us your take on his progression so far and maybe what fans can expect for the remainder of the season?
Well, I think he's been terrific. I mean, I don't think anybody expected this. Steve Yzerman didn't expect this. Their plan was to have him in junior for another year and showing that he can be a dominant player there and staying healthy. I think what you'll see from him is what you've seen from him so far, is a guy who has got good puck sense, good game sense. He puts himself in the right positions. He's very responsible defensively, not afraid to get to the net, which I think people were a little surprised about, is how committed he is to doing that. And I just think that he understood that there were a lot of questions facing him coming into the season, and I think he's out to prove that people were wrong about him. So I don't think you'll see any let up. I just think you'll see a continuation of the things that I've explained.
Damian, if the Lightning had to make one addition, you know, what area should they be looking at upgrading?
Oh, it's defense. I mean, it's not even a question. I mean, they need another top line defender. I mean, not an offensive guy. They need a real kind of stay at home, solid defensive player who can consistently play against top lines. I mean, it's very, very hard to come by, but that's what they need. I mean, a lot of teams can say that, but the Lightning, I think, you know, more so than most, would have that on their radar if they're still in the playoff picture and, you know, come January.
Tampa comes to Winnipeg on Monday. They, of course, play in St. Louis tonight. These two teams saw each other just a couple weeks ago. After that game, what were the Lightning general comments about playing against the Jets?
You know, the Lightning, it's funny. If you talk to them and talk to the coaches and the players, very rarely do they talk or want to speak about the opposition. Their standard line is, look, it's all about what we do. If we can maintain, you know, our system and do what we want to do and play that to the best of our ability, we're going to, you know, we have a pretty good chance to win. So, you know, there really wasn't any comments specifically about the Jets other than the fact that, you know, everybody's, you know, really happy to see them back in the league. So we have a guy, Nigel Kerwin, who grew up in Winnipeg or spent 15 years in Winnipeg and was a big fan of the original Jets. So it was more along those lines. It wasn't so much deconstructing what they were doing on the ice.
Will you be with them on Monday here?
Will I?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'll be there. I'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Damian Christodero from the St. Petersburg Times. We look forward to seeing you in person, of course, Monday night, Jets Lightning here in Winnipeg.
Okay, guys. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Damian. Appreciate it, as always. You know, we'll see the 1-3-1 in person. You can judge for yourself what it does to a hockey game.
With the Jets' lack of discipline, that could be an ugly game.
Love the 1-3-1 that the Legal Curve has going in the press box, though.
Yeah, it's great. You
it's
know,
great system.
You get by Drew.
One guy gets the popcorn. You got to get by Drew.
Yeah.
Then you get to Richie, Dave, and me to get to Remus. Remus is like the one on the other end. So Drew gets the popcorn.
Right.
And we've had some stalemates up there and some stale popcorn.
Yes.
On that note, let's
yeah, that's not bad.
That's not
that
bad.
Was, well, that's
that
was not
good.
Bad.
You got that was good.
I know Drew. Drew doesn't find me funny at all.
Remus is giving a clap.
Remus is giving me something here. So
that's not bad. That's not bad at all. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, NHL news and notes. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2:15 in the afternoon. Still to come. Darren Payne, color commentator for the St. Louis Blues. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Heard from Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, and last segment, Damian Christodoro from the St. Petersburg Times.
Drew, I don't know if you realize this or Richie realized this. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to creep you out here.
You're already creeping me out, so that's failed.
While we were in New York, that was our one-year anniversary on the station.
Not the case. Our first show was November 6th on the station.
Yeah, that's when we were in New York.
Right, but so this would be the first show after one year.
Yeah.
I did mention
so
that to Richie.
Do we have some type of Oreo birthday cake or some type of dainty to celebrate this?
I got to be honest. After New York City, none of us need any more cake.
Oh, the amount of New York falafel that I ate and pancakes, and we had so much good food. The steak at Peter Luger's in Brooklyn, oh my God. I've been having dreams of that steak. Wow, that was good.
Richard, can you follow up?
Katz's was the best pastrami sandwich.
See, I didn't
I've
go to Katz's. I slept in.
Yeah, well, that was a bad mistake on
and
your
you
part.
And you watched like that movie with Vin Diesel until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, XXX, my favorite movie, as you know.
Who stayed, by the way, Ezzy, who takes a bath in a hotel bathtub?
You know, sensitive skin. I needed to take a bath.
That wasn't the cleanest, like, bathroom either. The rest of the room was pretty nice, but...
Would you take a bath in any bathtub besides your own personal home bathtub?
Well, some people don't like baths. I like a bath. It's soothing.
No
it's good for your skin.
Do you have bubbles?
You put a...
He just blew bubbles into the water. Yeah. I have no problem with you enjoying baths, but it seems very odd to take a bath in a hotel bathtub.
In the middle of the day in New York City.
Yeah, but...
Beautiful day, by the way.
Yeah, it could have been a better fall day.
I was out all day. You know, there's that Highline Park in Manhattan. We walked, and I just needed to take a bath. Sometimes a man needs to take a bath. Not in the stock market, but in a hotel room in New York.
I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. Let's go to NHL news and notes. I'm sorry, Timmy. I forgot to give you a heads up there.
NHL news and notes.
I think Tim is so disgusted with what we're talking about. It's like, I don't need to visualize that. Nobody needs to visualize me in a bathtub.
It's probably
just something
true.
You don't want to do.
Philadelphia Flyers signed Braden Coburn to a 4-year, $18 million contract extension. Is he the heir apparent on the Flyers' blue line?
To who?
I don't know.
Chris Pronger?
What kind of question is that, Drew?
I mean, he's obviously not Chris Pronger, but is he worth that kind of money?
Similar to the Jets on Thursday. You mailed that one in. No, Braden Coburn. Braden Coburn, is he worth that much money? Sure. Braden Coburn could have been a Winnipeg Jet. Or probably Jets wouldn't even be here if Braden Coburn wasn't traded for Alexei Zhitnik, which is the worst trade ever. I can't believe Don Waddell did that. Anyways, Braden Coburn is a very good skater. He's not the most physical player, but when you get on his nerves, clearly you saw the other night when he got into a fight and... got the better of, I forget who it was that he was fighting, but it was on tap at Steve Downey. He got better of Steve Downey, but, you know, he's a good skater, guys. He's not the most aggressive, but he can use his body the right way. He's defensively sound, offensively, makes a really nice first pass out of the zone, can quarterback the second unit. I thought that was good value. I think everything he does is solid, and, you know, he's a Western Canadian boy. They like that in Philly. I thought that was a good deal.
Yeah, Richie from Shaunavon, Saskatchewan. He's 26. You know, he's in his prime, and let's be honest, Pronger and Timonen, they only have a few years left there. They're not going to be around for longer than a couple of years after this season, maybe. We'll see. But, you know, $4.2 million a year, whatever he got, 4 years, $18 million, was it? So, I mean, that's worth it. He's a very responsible defenseman. And, he's not, you know, Scott Stevens, you know, physical at all times type of player, but he's a very solid defenseman. And that's a guy that, you know, Atlanta drafted, 8 years ago that they probably still like in the system. Because right now, wouldn't it be nice to have a Braden Coburn on the Jets' D?
Absolutely.
Probably. A lot of teams would want this guy, and he might not be as offensive.
Alexei Zhitnik brought so much to that at the franchise.
You know, he's similar in a way. Yeah, exactly. He's similar in a way, guys, to an Eric Brewer. You know, not the best offensively, not the most physical that can be. He's a little more physical than Brewer, but good skater, big guy, takes up a lot of room. He shoots left. They play. Yeah, they're similar.
One of the teams off to the hottest start this season is the Dallas Stars. Yeah. They lost defenseman Alex Goligoski for 4 weeks with a broken thumb yesterday.
that will hurt them for sure, Drew. Their transition game, obviously moving the puck out of their own zone. He's a good skater. He can create offense on the back end there, too, on the power play. That's going to be a big loss, and Dallas has certainly surprised all observers, outside observers, probably people inside Dallas as well, and probably inside the organization. So that will be interesting to see how they fare over the next 4 weeks or so. I was expecting a drop down anyways. Maybe that'll be compounded by this injury.
Speaking of finger injuries, Lubomir Vyshnovsky just went out for also 4 weeks with a broken finger. What does he do to Anaheim's back end?
I didn't see that injury. I was watching that. It was last night's game against Vancouver.
Came out this afternoon.
Yeah, I didn't read that. Well, I mean, you're losing your best offensive defenseman, and Anaheim, I mean, they just broke a six-game losing streak, so, I mean, that's not good for them. They also took advantage of a Vancouver team that got into the penalty box trouble there last night, and then, you know, they made it a game towards the end. But Lubomir Vyshnovsky, even though he's maybe not on the pace that he was of a year ago or 2 years ago, you're losing an offensive defenseman that you don't have a lot of. Cam Fowler hasn't been that good. And let's be honest, nobody on Anaheim has been that good. Timu has gone through a drought. Corey Perry and Getzlaff have struggled all year. So not really good timing on that one.
Nothing to add, Richie?
You know, it's not the greatest defense. He's a great skater. He can quarterback the power play. They're gonna miss him for sure. Their power play has a lot of weapons, but when you don't have the facilitator at the top of the blue line to get that going, that could be an issue. Anaheim's been on a bad start, so this could be a really, really bad injury for them.
Now, Vyshnovsky had, I think, 62 points last year. Yes. He's only got 4 this year.
He was a leading defenseman in points last year.
Yeah.
And their transition game, too. They have a lot of good forwards, but their defense is lacking, and that could be an issue.
James Reimer's mother expresses frustration with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Justified or not? Do you think he suffered a concussion first of all?
Oh, I think for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
No doubt about
that. They're calling it whiplash, Richie.
Yeah, and with concussion-like symptoms. So, you know, why don't they just call it a concussion?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know what goes on in Toronto. I don't know why they didn't bring in another goaltender this summer. I have questions about many things that they do. But, yeah, he's obviously a very important part of their team, and now I need to see about this Scrivens guy on TSN for half an hour because, you know, everybody wants to hear about the Leafs, and understandably so. They're quote-unquote Canada's team. But
and they're doing well. Yeah, they're doing well for now.
It's like it's enough of the Leafs.
Yeah. I didn't really see what were the exact comments that his mom made because I didn't see them,
Scrivens
so I can't comment.
Scrivens plays one game, and everybody in Toronto wants to make him, you know, the king. Take it easy. All right? Take it easy.
We're going to get to Colin Scrivens later on in Rapid Fire.
Ben Scrivens,
sorry.
Not Colin Scrivener, the former Winnipeg Blue Bomber.
That's what it was. That name sounded familiar.
Yeah, I got those two confused. Just that, for some reason, Reimer's mother was saying that she was, you know, concerned or upset with the lack of information. Well, call your son, right? Why should the organization? I mean, the whole thing's bizarre.
It's
a little
bit frustrating.
Do you think that Dave Festchuk was wrong for contacting...
What's wrong with that?
I don't think he's doing his job.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the thing for James, let's be honest, James Reimer played unbelievably last year, and he came into the season as the number one goalie, and he's frustrated. Maybe that's just frustration speaking, but he's got to get healthy.
His injury is less of a mystery than Ron Wilson still having a job.
Well, no, they've made the playoffs every... Oh, wait.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
They're terrible. Though. Yeah. Oh, wait.
Goaltending controversy in Buffalo.
No.
It's not controversy.
No. Jonas Enroth is an unbelievable... I don't think... No. How many games has the guy lost since he's still a rookie, right?
Very good. Very
I don't
good
think he's
team.
Lost a game in the NHL.
He's very good.
He has to be the best backup
matter.
In the NHL.
It
maybe
matter.
You can make an argument that him and Corey Schneider are too good to be backups.
Exactly. He's Corey Schneider. That's what it is.
It's not a controversy, though.
Do you have no concerns? Ryan Miller is going to... How much longer until... If Miller continues struggling?
It doesn't matter. So he plays him for 10 games in the middle of the season. When the first game of the playoffs starts, Miller will be there.
Yep.
There's much ado about nothing in Buffalo because now they have everything. So the media can't complain about what they don't have, so they're going to make a story out of this.
I don't think we're expecting Enroth to be in net against Boston tonight, are we? Miller's got to be back.
I would assume likely not.
Yeah, Miller's got to be back in net there.
Buffalo's going to make the playoffs so they can afford to go through this drought with Miller.
Well,
right
you keep him a little bit. If he plays 10 games less in the regular season, it's not the end of the world. He stays strong
deep
into the playoffs.
Exactly.
I think on another team where you had a goalie that was struggling and maybe I mean, Ryan Miller, if you look around the NHL, what goalies, like, have the number one spot given to them no matter how well the backup plays? Roberto Luongo is one. Ryan Miller is another.
And, Eddie, you know what it is, more than anything? It's not only pedigree, it's money. Sure. Jeremy Miller and Luongo have big tickets. They can't afford to put a $6 million goaltender on the bench.
I'm waiting for the Buffalo News to write an editorial saying that they should trade Ryan Miller.
For Vinny LeCallier.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Buffalo, Sabres owner Terry Pegula reaffirms his donation of $88 million to the Penn State hockey program. Any problem with that in the light of this week's tragedy?
What? What does he have to do with that?
Nothing. He has nothing at all. But, I mean, you're fine.
Who cares?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get into maybe that controversy right now. It was obviously horrible news and it's tragic. But
yeah,
I think
of course,
but I think Terry Pegula, was he a former alumni?
Oh, yeah, he was a private donor in the school's history.
I think we should probably just realize that that's two separate.
He's building a new. The $88 million is going towards an arena campus.
There. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. It's good philanthropy.
I mean, the issues with college football.
Yeah.
This isn't a football issue, obviously, but the issues with. We're not going to get into that.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah. Football and hockey are separate.
There. Another week passes with no sign of Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, Drew. I mean, it's got to be disconcerting for everybody involved, just all fans. And when to expect him, I don't know. I know he's been playing physical in practice. You know, there is a part of me who thinks maybe they're just holding him back because they're playing so well. They're such a good team that why even rush him? And there's another part of me that goes, well, you know, what's the holdup?
If he's not wearing the red jersey in practice, and he is playing physically in practice, sometimes
he's still playing,
and he's initiating that contact. Yeah. I mean, I understand your point, but you know, practice isn't going to get any more physical than it already
but
is.
Maybe just because get him like, accustomed to it, so he plays 3 weeks in practice. I mean, again, Drew, what's the rush?
Yeah, he'll be back by the time the Penguins are in Winnipeg. For all those people that have any paranoia about whether or not Crosby will be back December 23rd when the Penguins play in Winnipeg, he'll be back by then. He'll be back in probably the next 2 to 4 weeks.
You speak very...
I'm
not so sure about that there. When did you get your PhD in concussion management?
2005.
2005? Okay, good. Thank you. I couldn't remember when you had that or not. Chris Pronger returns to the Flyers lineup, this time wearing a visor. If you were, would you...
Great decision.
Would you mandate...
Why not?
Would you put it into a player's contract that they have to wear a visor?
If you're the team, maybe. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Why bother messing around anymore?
Well, I mean, it's the player's choice, and I don't really have a problem with that. If the players don't want to wear a visor, go ahead. The team should probably want to mandate that, and they can grandfather it in. But anybody who says, I mean, you play with a visor and it inhibits your sight line... Yeah, come on, guys.
They said the same thing about wearing goalie masks.
But these guys all wear it now. Back in the day, maybe, because they never wore visors.
Yep.
But everybody wears a visor in junior now.
Yep.
And the guys, you know, who wear visors, sometimes you don't want to wear them. So you wear them and you tilt it up and you hardly even see it.
I think you know what?
That was your style, wasn't it?
We were talking about this before the lockout. And I think I would have no problem with the NHL making it mandatory for every single player to wear a visor. And it's simple. Protect your vision. I mean, like, I realize that a lot of players in the NHL would tell you, I just don't want to wear it. I don't, for whatever reason, I don't like just the comfort of it. It doesn't have anything to do with the view, because we all know that visors now are way better than they were 15 years ago, right? But it's your vision. It's your vision. It's your eyes. And year after year, there's injuries that have to do with a puck in your eye and sticking your eye. It's pretty simple as far as I'm concerned. Protect your players. Protect their eyes. And I'm not sure when it's finally going to be made mandatory, but I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to be disputing it at all.
As an NHL player, you mean you're not going to be disputing
it? Yeah, I mean, I've got 1 year left on my entry-level deal, and, you know, I already wear a visor. No. But, I mean, you know, like, I mean, look at player after player, Colin White, Brian Berard, the list goes on.
They know this too, Ezzy. If they don't want to do anything about it, then whatever.
Something to be said for the cognitive dissonance that most NHL players
Iserman, have. Steve Yzerman, I bet he would never have a problem with it.
He never wore a visor.
No,
but his eye injury. He took the puck in the eye.
Yeah, in Ottawa, right?
Was that Calgary. Playoffs. We were there.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, sorry.
It's like the 92 Charleston incident.
That's right. There. Good nib, excellent nub. Let's go
nice
to break.
Nice dorsal meat apex.
Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Darren Pang is going to join us. You're listening to
Banger.
Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A programming note for next week. We have to wake up very, very early in the morning.
You need to tell people when we're on.
I'm going to get to that.
People are always asking me. We talked about mentioning it during the show, and you haven't told anybody.
You've been talking too much. I haven't been able to get a word in edgewise. Next week, 8 a.m. start here, Saturday morning.
Oh, my God.
Pretty much, if you want to find us, this is your schedule. Most of the time, it's noon, because the Jets play at 6.
I'll be sleeping over that day,
on Saturdays. You're not allowed in my house. But... regardless of what time the Jets play, we are on 6 hours prior to puck drop. Got it? 6 o'clock puck drop, we're on at noon. 2 p.m. puck drop, we're on at 8 a.m. So if the entire Winnipeg would, you know, provide us a wake-up call at around 6 a.m., that would be great. We'd really appreciate that. Let's head to the Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program Darren Pang. Darren, welcome to the show.
How are you doing today?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Very good, thanks.
That's good. Darren, let's start with Davis Payne, the ex-head coach of the St. Louis Blues. Pretty much in a nutshell, why did they remove head coach from his job title?
Well, we can only, you know, we can only surmise, judging from our conversations with Doug Armstrong, the general manager, that, you know, that there was, in all likelihood, an evaluation period going on. There's a lot of players like T.J. Oshie and Chris Stewart, Berglund in one more year. You know, players that could potentially be long-term $5 million a year players that weren't playing up to their capabilities. And I think the evaluation process, from the eyes of a guy like Ken Hitchcock, a lot more experienced than a guy like Davis Payne. But I'll say this, make no mistake, Davis Payne really. He did a good job. He's a good coach, and I think this was more about a relationship and trust between Doug Armstrong and certainly an experienced friend, but an experienced hockey man in Ken Hitchcock to take this team to that next level.
You know, soon after the hiring of Hitchcock, he acquired one of his former players, or Doug Armstrong did, in Chris Russell. Maybe give us your thoughts on that move, and also whether some more moves should be expected.
Yeah, well, at this point, it seems like that answer would be no, that there wouldn't be any moves, but who knows? Because, you know, when your general manager makes a move as significant as this, only 13 games into the season, he's telling you that he believes that this team is set up to win right now, and he's telling everybody that. So, I mean, if players underperform, you know, in the next 20 games, and let's say Ken Hitchcock and Army, you know, evaluate those players, and they don't see them as long-term players, but they're going to sign to big contracts, then there could potentially be more moves. But, I mean, Chris Russell comes with familiarity, there's no doubt. Doug Armstrong did say today that he'd been talking to Columbus, you know, prior to hiring Ken Hitchcock about Russell, and I back him up on that because I know another number of other teams had talked about Chris Russell as well. The one thing that the Blues wanted to do improve their puck movement on the left side. So now they've got Coley Acabo, Chris Russell, and the defensive-minded Barrett Jacklin on the left side. So tonight you'll see Chris Russell play with Roman Pollock. Whether it's the entire game, I'm not sure, but he'll at least start there and play against the Tampa Bay Lightning with Roman. So he will play, and Ian Cole, the youngster that played for the last two games, won't play.
Panger, David Perron still hasn't played yet this year. Could you provide our listeners with an update, the latest update on his status?
He's doing very well. And again, I had a conversation with him today. He skates every day with the players. He works out. But he's still in a no-contact sweater.
Okay.
I asked him today if he's keeping a close eye on Sidney and his status in Pittsburgh. He says, absolutely. You know, I listen. He just, you know, basically what David Perron says right now is, I'm not there yet. I'm not quite there yet. And until I'm 100% certain that I'm at that spot where I can go out there and take a hit, I'm not going to go there. And he said it was a real lonely year last year. It was a long year. It was depressing. It was lonely. And I don't want to go back I don't want to go back there again, is how he said it to me. And it's totally understandable. If you haven't been there before, which I've never been there before, in terms of a serious concussion, he let me know how bad it was and how depressing it was. And so it's a spot that he doesn't want to go to, so he wants to make sure he's 100% before he gets out on the ice.
You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. We're joined by Darren Pang on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Darren, when the Blues acquired him last year, he put up almost a point a game. That's Chris Stewart. They got him from the Colorado Avalanche. This year, less success to start the year. Why has he been struggling?
That is an excellent question. And if you could figure that out, you can come over and be our sports psychologist. we all know how talented he is. He's got a big heart. He's well-liked. He just kind of went through a phase early in the season where he wasn't doing the little things that it takes for a big man to score goals. And maybe it's because he did catch fire here last year. He was tremendous. The power play improved significantly. The power play, climbed to number 10 overall in the NHL at the end of last year, and he was a big part of that. But I'm not going to say that he forgot what it took to get him to that point, because I don't think that's fair. I don't think he forgot. I just think he just stopped doing the little things, making it hard on the other team's defense and getting in front of the net. He's got such a good shot and he's got good hands that I think he started staying on the outside. And I've seen that a little bit with terrific players. And a guy, Jerome McGinn, was a guy like that. Every once in a while, he has to be reminded that he scores goals in front of the net. I think for Stewie right now, he's going through a phase where I shouldn't say going through a phase, because I think his game is picking up here. But in the beginning, he was just thinking that he was going to be able to score off the rush or on the outside or, 40 feet away from the goalie, and that just wasn't going to happen. So he certainly has to play better, and so does his centerman, Patrick Berglund.
As it stands now, the Blues are 30th in the NHL in power play efficiency. What's been the cause of their struggles? Is it a systematic thing, or is it, individual players that aren't getting it done?
No, I think that there's been a number of different parts of the power play that weren't working early on. Entries into the zone, at one point weren't good. Then when the entries into the zone were good, then the calmness and the patience once they got in the zone wasn't very good. And then the battles on loose pucks. I think if four guys on the other team that are shorthanded are willing to outwork you, well, they're going to get the puck out of the zone. And I don't think that there was that commitment to supporting one another on the ice and keeping the puck into the zone. But I think they're using a structure now that they have used before, and that's really a 1-3-1. And the two main components on the points on the power play are Kevin Shattenkirk leading one group and Carlo Koliakovo leading the other group. Both guys have a right-hand shot on the left side, and whether it's Matt D'Agostini or TJ Oshie, and the premise of it is either a one-time play with a screen or a high, you can get a high tip in the high slot, much like what Stewart scored a couple of games ago against the Chicago Blackhawks. So I think that they're much more confident on the power play, and I think we're going to see a real turn in terms of the efficiency of the power play.
Now, Darren, back to Ken Hitchcock. Was he brought in to create a quote-unquote identity for this team?
Well, I think if you're bringing in Ken Hitchcock, you're probably thinking that behind closed doors. Yeah, he's such a veteran guy. He knows exactly what he wants. He knows how to sell it. He's a salesman by trade, and most good coaches in this league are salesmen. He is one. He has a standard that at the end of the day, when the players don't do that, he has the credibility to look into their eyes and say, well, then, if you don't want to be a winner, that's fine. You won't play. So structure, accountability. Those are things that all good experienced coaches carry around with them, and Ken Hitchcock's one of them.
Now, Darren, in the offseason, the team brought in, Doug Armstrong brought in two veteran players that he was familiar with, Jason Arnett and Jamie Langenbrenner, both stars for a period of time. How have they changed the dynamic, if they have, in the dressing room?
Well, they are, number one, as you guys know, their experience speaks for itself. Their Stanley Cup, their playoff games. But mm-hmm. I think even more so, they're guys that know how to balance things out, when if you're losing, a couple of games in a row. I think players like that find a way to stop the bleeding quicker than other players do, if you know what I mean. You don't want to carry a two-game skid and turn that into a seven-game skid. That's how you don't make the playoffs, and that's what the Blues went through several times last year. They turned what maybe should have been a 2-2-1 record, and they turned it into an 0-5-5 record.
Right.
And I think bringing in players like Jason and Jamie, they're perfect examples of, hey, boys, let's calm things down. But tomorrow when we come to work, let's come to work. and let's get out of this. And that's where they've been good on that side of it, but they've been good on the ice. Jason Arnott was arguably the best player in the last game. His face-offs have been magnificent. He's on a great line with, the Winnipeg native Alex Steen was on his line, but now they're going to make a little bit of a switch and put Vladimir Sobotka on that line. But he's playing with Langenbrunner, and they just read off of one another very well. And so they've been terrific. And the players love him. Already they've ingratiated themselves with the entire city and the community, but their teammates. So they're a lot of fun to be around, and they've got that old-school mentality that every young team needs.
Panger, we've got to ask you a question here while we have you on the line about goaltending. Ken Hitchcock has a really good reputation at getting the most out of his goalies, and you know, in two short games, you know, people have already noticed that Yaroslav Halak, there's a little bit of a change in his game. What specifically does he do to get the best out of his goalies?
Well, that's a really good point, but I will say this, that the timing was right. Yaro was trending north. You know, he played very well in Edmonton and in Minnesota, and then when Hitch came on board, you know, the first thing he did without hesitation was say, Yaroslav Halak's playing against Chicago. Right away, that made Yaro feel big again. It made him feel good. Yaro wants to win. And knowing that a coach is experienced, as Hitchcock comes in and says, you're the guy, you're going, it just gives you a great deal of confidence as an individual. So all that being said, the other part of it with Hitch is, I mean, he demands maybe a little bit more, defensively. So he works with Brad Shaw, our assistant coach, and, you know, they've got a system in our own zone. But I think what you find is when there is that team accountability, you end up blocking a little, you know, more shots. You end up, your second effort's just a little bit greater because Hitchcock puts a lot of ownership into that defensive side of the puck. So you're going to get applauded and a pat on the back and told you're a great player if you block a shot in your own zone. And I think that's why the goalies excel. I mean, from, you know, obviously from Eddie Belfour to the 900 goalies that Hitch had in Philadelphia. You know, you're gonna play a better defensive game because everybody has taken ownership of the defensive side of the game.
Darren Payne, color commentator for the St. Louis Blues, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Darren. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290. One final segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined now in studio by the big man himself, looking as gregarious as always, Gary Lawless. Good afternoon.
You guys haven't had me on in ages.
Yeah, we, you know, sort of written it into our contract. We only have to have you on once every couple months,
Fair enough. This is the obligatory G. Lawless visit.
That's right. This is the contractually obligated visit.
Keep this music on. This is Gary's theme music throughout the entire segment.
Do you need theme music?
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, if it's not off soon, I'm getting up and walking out.
Okay. I figured as much. Now, do we know where Hustler is? Is he awake?
Listen, only I am allowed to make those comments about Hustler. He's my brother.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to sort of make those shots. Has Hustler ever missed a show?
Never, man. He's reliable.
Never.
No, something. Even when he's coughing up a lung off air, he's always here.
He's like Cal Ripken.
Yeah, exactly. He's the...
So I don't think we should ever question his will or his commitment.
Hang on. Is he going to
play his hurt?
Is he going to walk in here with a terrible mustache, though? Is that something I can expect?
Oh, he's got his stash going, and I'll tell you what, though. From what I saw on Thursday, I made one of my rare appearances at the pub on Thursday night, went out for a beer.
Ooh. Yeah.
And Hustler had enough women around him to...
Yes, I'm awake.
He's in the house.
Hustler had enough women around him to have made kept the Illegal Curve boys happy for a year.
Wow.
So I don't know if I'd be... I wouldn't be working him over. The kid's got game.
So if we ever send Richie and Hustler out to the bar at the same time, would everyone else just go home in terms of the men? Would they just have to leave?
I would think that Rich and Hustler would work well together.
Yeah, they'd clean up?
Yes, not like Remus and Ginsburg.
You know, I've seen that in action. You know, Huss always sends me pictures now that we're BBM friends, and if just a little bit of that could rub off on me, I think, you know, Gary would start to respect me a little bit more, because I went for Gary's Halloween, as everyone knows, because I'm a huge Gary fan, and Gary basically said, you're not doing that ever again.
Well, the best part about that costume is that people tried to take pictures, but as he would open up the paper over his name tag, so nobody actually knew.
But you know what was really funny? Someone sent me one of those pictures, and I was like, you boob, Ezra. It wasn't even my column flag. It was Paul Wiesing.
I'm doing whatever I can to get into your friendship circle. I'll bring in the paper, I'll walk your dog, whatever. Gary, I'm trying here, okay?
Does Ezra have a checkbook? Because that's really the only way that's going to happen.
It'll bounce.
Yeah, it'll bounce.
I mean, he's got a checkbook, but it's as useless as anything else.
The David Stern of... Yeah. All right, what's up, boys?
Yeah, let's go to Rapid Fire, Timmy.
Rapid Fire.
Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender Ben Scrivens has played in 4 games. He has a goals against average of 3.28. He has a save percentage of .900. Why are we talking about him?
Because he's the Leafs goalie right now. I don't know. I mean, Reimer's injured. Gustafsson hasn't been very good. And I don't know. Maybe because he went to Cornell. He went to an Ivy League school. I don't know. I mean, it's Toronto, and he's had a few good games, and he's got a couple wins. But aside from that, I don't think he's the long-term solution there. Definitely not.
No, he hasn't been any good at all. He played one good game in St. Louis. People love to, say that the Toronto Netminder is the next one because they've been looking for the next one really since Kudjo left, although they had Belfour for a period there. That's why.
Gary?
How does this work? Do I wait?
Just chime in. Just scream it. You can
whenever
scream
you want,
at anybody
you want. To throw cold water all over the James Reimer story because
I know, he agree.
Thinks it's a beautiful story and he's this kid from...
Rowena.
Okay.
It's Morwena. Rowena is a first name. It's Morwena.
Is it Morwena?
Yeah, I've been there. I've had breakfast there before.
Everyone wants to sort of anoint him as the next Mike Palmatier because he's really the last time the Leafs had a really good goalie, as far as I'm concerned. And Felix Potvin for a while. I guess Felix is pretty good. He hasn't done much. His body of work is very small.
Yep.
And before, I know that the Leafs sort of thought, our goaltending problems are over. They're solved.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to see a little more from him, and part of that from a goalie is durability. There's a lot of questions about James Reimer still, and Ron Wilson's job hangs in the balance here because as much as Brian Burke has shown to be, to stand by his man, and, they were talking contract extension a few short weeks ago, if this continues... They're close to change in Toronto.
And I agree with Gary because you sign Reimer, you don't bring in any veteran this offseason, you hitch your wagon to him. No. It was kind
Jaguar's gone.
Questionable decision and leave Gustafsson as your backup. You couldn't have brought in Vokoun for, say, $4 million for a one-year deal. So anything to insulate him, I just didn't make any sense.
Given the war of words between the Nashville Predators and the Anaheim Ducks as of late, is there a better rivalry currently in the NHL?
I don't think so, Drew. I mean, these teams just hate each other. I mean, Tutu and Getzlaf obviously hate each other. There's no love lost between those two guys with Manitoba connection and Carlisle and Trotz. And those teams also play a really hard style, and they're on the edge. And so that makes for compelling hockey and compelling television.
Yeah, it's a good rivalry. I mean, there's obviously some other rivalries that are more, long-standing and go back. L.A. and San Jose have a pretty good rivalry going down there in California. Yep. But I think these are two teams that, like Richie said, they're hard-nosed teams, and they've got chippy players, and they're not just chippy players that don't play a lot. I mean, Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf, even Bobby Ryan, they're chippy, and Corey Perry took a penalty late in the game last night against the Canucks, so it's going to be fun to watch them play a few more times this year.
There's also a rivalry between the Hustler and Lawless Sandwich, although there's a new one now.
Yeah, what's with this 454?
Yeah, what's the story there?
We're going to own every spot on the menu. So there'll be 9 H&Ls and 1 IC.
And the IC will still dominate.
You're so funny. it's good that you're cute because,
you're not that smart? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, exactly. Yes. As far as our rivalries in the NHL, it's cyclical, right? Because, you can't tell me that there's a better rivalry in the NHL than Toronto, Montreal, except they both suck. And for years, it was like the drama to watch when Philly played Jersey or the Rangers or the Islanders, all those teams in the Eastern Seaboard. When you used to play a team in your division as many as 6 to 8 times a year, the rivalries were way more intense. And this is what Dale Tallon told me when I was in Florida recently. He wants to go back to those division formats where you play the first round is 1-4 in your own division.
Yeah, sure.
And then it carries over into the next year and helps develop those rivalries. Teams don't play each other enough right now in interdivisional play to have great rivalries.
I believe if they go to the four-division format, I think it's eight times they play each other in the regular season.
And then you meet each other in the playoffs. You play a team as many as 12 times in a year.
Yeah. And, familiarity will definitely breed the contempt.
We hate each other.
You mean the Illegal Curve crew hates each other? Yeah.
I think Gary's right about being cyclical. Right now, the best rivalry you could argue, it'd probably be a pretty easy argument. The Jets' best rival is the Florida Panthers because of the hit that that was laid on Tobias Enstrom by Skilly.
And the Upshaw hit that night on Evander Kane, which caused raised eyebrows. Yeah, for sure.
I thought that hit was worse, actually, than the
other. The best rivalry, though, maybe also Chicago-Vancouver's been pretty good couple of years as well.
That's right. One final question on rapid fire. We'll cut it a bit short. George Larac called Wayne Gretzky a terrible coach and intimated hockey has a steroid problem. Do you put any stock whatsoever in what George Larac says about anything?
Larac's a joke. I mean, he's trying to get attention. He's just pandering to anybody who will give him an interview, and nothing he says is taken seriously in the hockey world.
I'm not taking that much stock into it. Richie made sure that I interviewed Jovanovski after the game, and I asked him about it. He didn't really want to comment on it that much, but I don't take anything into it. The steroid thing is something that we've already beaten to death, really, in the NHL and in pro sports in general. And as far as him making comments about, you know, Gretzky being a bad coach, I think it's something that you don't want to write that in a book. I'm just saying that. I think he lost a lot of credibility by, why would you go after the greatest hockey player in NHL history? Yeah, he wasn't a very good, Gretzky didn't
Who's
have a very good
ref. Book?
Gretzky didn't have a very good coaching record, but I don't know if that's the one guy that
you want
to
send. Too many sacred cows on the Illegal Curve for me. Gretzky is an awful hockey coach. He's right. And as far as there being a steroid program and problem in hockey, there is.
There might be. There probably is.
George Larac, I'm fine with it. And, this is a guy who spent all these times in rooms, listened to what hockey players say, and then went out and wrote it. Is he trying to get attention? Most people that write books are. That's the name of the game. I want to sell my book. Hey, look, people have been saying all in the last week, Jose Canseco came out and said these things, and everyone called him a joke, and it turned out that he was right, but we're not going to draw the same comparison to George Larac. Why the hell not?
How would George Larac know if Gretzky's a good coach or not, considering the fact that he didn't even drop the gloves?
Played against him.
They didn't even drop the gloves when he was signed to fight, and he just stood around trying to make himself a hockey player.
What's that have to do about determining whether or not a guy is a good coach
How would he know? He's not a coachable player.
So what?
He played.
He listened to other players. The gossip amongst players in the National Hockey League completely rampant. And it's well known that players did not think Wayne Gretzky was a good hockey player because he never tried. He sat upstairs. I watched a number of their practices. He was never on the ice. He was up in the stands on the phone.
Gary, I'm not saying that he was a good coach. I'm just saying I'd rather hear from somebody who actually is a legitimate hockey player.
That wasn't the question that was posed to us.
Technically true on Gary's part, but I see Richard's point at the same time.
I think we're
on a technicality, you might be right.
Richard is always in a court of law, and he'll forget what was asked in order to get his point home.
Gary, are we going to see Drew go buy a $4.54 sandwich? Because I'm going to go get an Illegal Curve sandwich.
I'll tell you what, the only guy I know that has been able to finish a $4.54 without blinking, he actually claims he had a $4.57. Mike Keane had a $4.54, and then his partner, his buddy that he was with, Kevin Kaiser, ordered a regular H&L and couldn't finish it. Keener polished it off.
Apparently, the only reason for that is because they were sold out of the Illegal Curve.
That's exactly right.
That's the only reason why they went for that
sold
choice.
Out? Not enough brisket.
They haven't made one in such a long time. They don't know how to make them anymore.
Yeah.
And
I got my Bob on the line.
Drew already sold out before the Illegal Curve show even started. So.
That's it for this week. Let's wrap it up here, Timmy. We got to say our big thank yous.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Anytime, Gary. You know that. You don't have to go anywhere. You're on right away. Big thank yous to Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. Big thank you to Winnipeg Jets General Manager.